M1 is the finance super app that puts you in control of your wealth. Invest, borrow, save, and spend your money how you want with sophisticated automation tools to help you reach your financial goals more easily. 2021 is about rebuilding, building health, building wealth, and everything in between. I've been using M1 for years to manage my long-term investment portfolio. M1 lets me follow some of the top-performing hedge funds like Code2 and balance my pie based on what the pros are doing. It's truly my favorite investing app in the world. Go to m1finance.com/Katoon to get started today and earn $30 to invest after you fund your account. Terms and conditions apply. M1, yours to build. Welcome to Tech Nori Podcast. I'm Scott Katoon. On today's show, we catch up with John Pompliano, aka Pomp's brother. I told him on the show, I think he's my favorite Pomp to follow. I know Anthony started the whole trick, and it's not just because Anthony hasn't come on this show yet. I'm not just saying that. I actually think John covers more broadly things that the regular person, the retailer, is interested in. On the show, we talked about a whole bunch of stuff. Obviously, the Best Business Show, which is a collaborative between Pomp and his wife and his brothers, which is an entirely different story. If you're not familiar with at Pomp or Anthony Pompliano, you should probably look it up. He's got over 1 million followers on Twitter. His other brothers, all of them, Joe, John, they're all like 200,000, 500,000, 50,000 followers. And they have sort of redefined what it's like to be a Twitter and media person. Like, it used to be reporters use Twitter and you would go on Twitter to find stories, and now they kind of make the stories and they write it in a way that people digest it. They write a lot of threads, they host shows. It's sort of the future of media. It's something I've been chasing since like 2012, almost 2011. We're here. We're at a point where now we can actually make a living doing this. You can be a reporter. Maybe you weren't a reporter. Maybe you still are a reporter. You can go on Substack and on Twitter and have a podcast like this and talk about the things you're interested in. And the shows that do really well are the shows where the people who are being reported on or talked about are connected enough to get kind of inside information, or at least inside insight. And so this show, we go down a whole bunch of stuff, from building the Pomp media empire, if you will, to investing, to retail investing, to the changing landscape of how you monetize media. But most importantly, we talk about just the reality of the Twitter sphere we live in. The fake news, pumping up numbers, bullshit, NFTs, like everything is a commodity. Everything is a reachable and achievable and investable and saleable. And there is an endless supply, whether you're investing in music or cards or NFTs or crypto or, you know, whatever it is you're into, And if you're unfamiliar with the fast-growing Pomp dynasty, well, allow me to introduce you to the youngest of the Pomp brothers, John Pompliano. I'm excited to have John Pomp. He's the best Pompliano. I want to say that first off. I know Anthony Pomp started the whole thing, and all the brothers have jumped. I'm going to tell you the truth, not because you're sitting on the show. You're my favorite Twitter follow of the group. You should tell all of them that.
Yeah, I appreciate that. You've given a lot of love on Twitter, so it's much appreciated.
Of course. So, like, here's the deal. Like, there's so much we can talk about. And the people who listen to this show usually kind of go between, like, into crypto, a lot of retail investing, a ton of founders, a lot of VC angel types. They're all looking for advantages as much as, like, trends and, like, how do guys like you and I see the world when they come from more of a buttoned-up world? I used to be the guy who'd be on here talking about this crazy next thing that's coming and you didn't know it. I actually think you guys as a group particularly have really, like, wrapped a beautiful bow on that whole concept. So let's dig into media first off. Like, tell people where to follow you and what you do specifically as it pertains to the Pomp Tribe empire. And then we'll kind of unspool this thing down.
So I'm John Pompliano, at John Pompliano on Twitter. I obviously try to build a personal brand through Twitter. And then we also do a business show called The Best Business Show on YouTube every day that we kind of break down different business topics, strategies, anything kind of going around the business world, cryptocurrencies, anything that people would be interested in. And then we also harp on a lot of educational stuff, so personal finance, that a lot of people just aren't taught in school or really at all in life besides personal education.
So that latter part, we will get more into in a minute. I think it's the most important part for several reasons, because education and just financial literacy in general, we have, as a country, have been like the worst for decades now. It's like we were great in the 50s and 60s and part of the 70s. And then I don't know what the fuck happened. And people just stopped learning. COVID had this weird thing where it actually enabled people to have the time and the inclination and a little bit of spare cash to get involved in investing and open the door for guys like you and I and the rest of your crew to talk about it. The cool part, which again, we will get into, but the cool part to me is from an advertising sponsorship, generate revenue to a person like you or your, you know, the group that you guys do this stuff with or myself, is it self-selects an audience that's of a certain financial level, which attracts sponsors, which attracts more followers because they want to know what everyone's talking about. And you almost created a flywheel essentially out of Twitter with just the concept of, let me give you information in a non-condescending way. And let me talk to you a little bit about what to do with that information. Does that feel accurate or?
Yeah, that's pretty accurate. I think Twitter's a good way to reach different people. It's one of my favorite social media platforms for that reason, right? You can share ideas. When it first came out, I actually just thought it was kind of just like Facebook statuses almost.
Yep.
And I didn't really
I mean, to be honest.
Yeah. But they've really built up the platform. And that's really what it is, right? I don't think that personal finance is talked about enough for how important it is. And the older generation and my parents, it was always kind of like save, save, save. And 45% of Americans don't have investable assets. And that's really how you build generational wealth and even your own wealth for you and your family.
Yeah, I totally agree. You know, we have been sponsored for a long time by M1 Finance because they essentially caught wind that I used the app to finance my own house just by, you know, basically investing on it and, you know, dollar cost average my way to a decent amount of money. And I feel like, I don't know how I even got started on it, to be totally honest. It went back to like 2017, 18. I wasn't really big into stocks. I mean, I was in startups and raising money, but that was different than handling my own money. And somewhere along the line, it was part of the tools, but it became kind of almost like a club conversation. Like you'd have your group of friends and it became like, oh, cool. Like, what are you looking at? And then once it started to hit Twitter, and I think Twitter did a great job of facilitating this conversation, bringing people like yourself to the forefront. It did a fantastic job of making me feel left out. Like if I didn't know what was going on with GameStop and AMC, I'm like, well, fuck, like, where have I been? And that's where guys like you, I think, not only keep the conversation going, and obviously Wall Street Bets and the rest kind of pushed it to the top, but it was you guys looking at it and going, no, that's why they're doing the squeeze. No, that's how Robinhood fucked everybody. Like that's, you know, and you start to view something that previously was maybe a little intimidating in more of a street view level, which makes it less intimidating. And then you see money coming in your own pocket and you're like, well, shit, like let's do more.
Yeah. Well, as I've grown up, to be honest, I've realized a lot of different things that just weren't taught to me. Everything from when you sign a lease for an apartment, what are the different terms of that lease? When you get insurance, everything that goes into kind of just living life and growing up and going through stuff that someone has gone through before. It's amazes me how none of this is really taught to you in school. And there's like a few simple principles that I try to go by, which is basically just like stay out of bad debt, invest what you can, spend less than you make. And one of the main ones I try to do is pay yourself first. So I read The Richest Man in Babylon, which was probably one of my favorite personal finance books in the sense of like, it just breaks it down in such a simple note of no matter what you make and no matter what your situation is, it's important that you get yourself financially solvent and then you can kind of go ahead. You can't win the race if you're not even at the starting line.
I think that's the biggest mistake everyone makes. We could talk about this as a retail investor. We could talk about this in venture. Like as I'm trying to raise a round for a company, it's like, you can't be at a full sprint if you haven't even started walking. And I think people get bored with it. And then it's like, you know, there's nothing wrong with making $5,000 extra. That's it. Not a shit ton of money, just $5,000. What happens is the compound interest over the next 2 years of every time you made $5,000 turns into like 500. And now we're talking.
Yeah. I was actually looking at a chart earlier today because it's one of my favorite is Warren Buffett's net worth, right?
Yeah.
And it's so slow and steady. And then all of a sudden it's almost like a rocket ship where he's got $60, $80 billion. And he was only a millionaire by the time he was 30. So it's just interesting to see that compound growth. And look, I can't harp on this enough. You're just not taught about it in traditional finance. And it's the most important thing in your life.
I'll tell you. So like on that note with Buffett, I'm going to get this wrong. I looked at it a while ago, but it was like 44, 46. He's in still a double digit millions. Like he's, you know, 30 million, 60 million, whatever it was, which of course is a shit ton of money. Don't get me wrong. But it was like his ability to make each one of those dollars all go to work simultaneously. And you said something interesting when you were like, the compound interest part, just interest in general, is so misunderstood. And I think that it's because an entire sub layer of wealth was controlled by wealth managers and financial people who were like, no, it's too complicated. You could never understand, you moron. And like they hid interest. They would give us these little envelopes with like, we returned 13% interest this year. And it's like, well, how much did you fucking make? Like, I'm curious. They hide it. So we never really knew. And now with Robinhood and conversations going on, it's like, wait a minute. Like I can make the same move as you. Like I don't, you know.
Yeah. I think the biggest thing is people try to make that 100X, especially I'm 25 now. So especially my generation, they're always looking for how do I get to $1 million? How do I get to $1 billion as quick as possible? And that's definitely the goal for a lot of people. People optimize stuff for different reasons, but it's really just, it's time in the market, not timing the market. And they're timeless principles for a reason. When you look at the financial crash of 2007, 2008, within 5 years, I think it was, we were back to about where we were with the S&P 500. Yep. Right. So even if you bought it at the very top, within 5 years, you were back to square one. And then it's simply growing from there.
Listen, I don't want to sound like the condescending old guy. You told me you're 25. I can tell you how to get rich really quick. You got to find a really good hit YouTube show and jump on. I don't know if you have any brothers or anybody you can do this with, but you got to find a way to get in there and you guys will, I think you'll make it.
Yeah. I think on the content note, we were talking before this and there's really two ways to kind of monetize content. And it's either through ads or through subscription. And I feel like more and more people have kind of floated towards that advertisement revenue stream yeah. versus the subscription because there's free content everywhere and people yeah. are going to float to it.
Yeah. No, I totally agree. I think the interesting thing, and I'd like to spin into the YouTube and the family media empire here for a little bit because they're to exactly what you just said. You know, a lot of venture groups backed things like BuzzFeed and Axios, and you've all read, I'm sure, in the news, like they're not so good and how the exits have not been nearly what they were thought that they would once be. It's laziness on the media world's part. It's them in almost a judgy way, looking at people like you and I who have plenty of education and plenty of understanding and plenty of ability to read the line and thinking no one's going to come to us. And they got lazy and relied on this ad dollar, I think. And you start looking at like, I don't even know. Is his newsletter paid? I don't even remember if it's paid or not. He's got a shit ton of subscribers.
He has two different versions. Well, one version, but he sends the paid every day, I believe, and then yep. the subscription every day, and then the free. I think he sends once a week, something like that. So yes. he utilizes both different revenue.
Right, and so like I guess my point here is, you can do both in a way where, if I'm just a casual reader. And I just am curious what you guys think on, you know, these five things. We're kind of alike. We swim the same circle. So like, I like to know what you're into, but I really want to know a hot take and why, something that he's going to have taken the time to do some research and to actually write out, I'm willing to pay for that. And I think that there's a huge underestimation on the media companies being like, no, we've done, you know, subscriptions forever. The newspaper ended up on your doorstep. People don't want to pay it. And it's like, that's kind of because you fill it with shit, like, to be honest.
Yeah, well, when you have to do something, I think it really presses you to look, even if it's not great, we have to put it out. So YouTube's a good engine for that, right? So when you think about YouTube, it will mess up your algorithm. The Nelk boys talk about it all the time, which are yep. in the content creation game, which is if they miss a week, it will actually mess up the algorithm and won't push their video as much as possible because they release one video a week. Yep. So it's really, really important to, hey, look, even if we don't want to send out this video, it's not the greatest content we've ever done. They still have to do it.
But there are ways around that. And I think that's where independent creators like yourselves have been able to execute. Like you can still have a video and that video be an interview with like, I was cheering on Darren Revelle. Were you on the episode with Darren for the
yeah.
best? Okay. So like Darren and I were texting before this show. He's like, I'm going to give it to Pomp. I'm going to tell Pomp crypto's fucking scam. And by the end of it, whether you were a pro crypto or pro DeFi or you're anti or whatever, you were like, man, I understand both of your perspectives. And that show was was good enough to be a standalone. And then you can come back the next day and you have a news drop. And then there was the Coinbase, you know, IPO, and that like was a whole cycle itself. When you're a big org and you don't really think about it in like ground level terms, I think you struggle and you have to push out shitty content. Whereas I think when you're a little more nimble and run things kind of like with a group, it's easier to have an interview and have a reason to go online. And it's something that people will still like.
I think that there's two ways of looking at it, right? So for the bigger kind of legacy institutions, they have resources, they have name recognition that really helps even individuals build their personal brand. And then on the other side is when you're doing it by yourself, content creation takes a very long time.
Yes,
it's not like you just kind of go out and can put anything out and your followers will follow. You'll lose a following. You'll lose credibility by putting out false information. It takes hours and hours of just scanning. I look at millions of things a day probably that never get posted, that get written, because I'm like, do people actually care about this?
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of funny the way you mentioned that, because what a great opportunity that was lost. Like the big legacy groups, they went the other way. They were trying to like keep their talent from building their own identity. And when we are like in regard, they really should have been hiring guys like you guys or sponsoring you or supporting you in some way so that they would have had both great brand recognition and also the individual who's got a following on his own right.
Yeah, I think Barstool Sports actually does this very well.
Yes. They
let the individual build their brand, and that's almost kind of their sales pitch, right? Is, hey, while you're here, we're going to build your brand alongside of you. And then in turn, the harder they work and the more they build their brand, the more your media conglomerate gets recognition.
However you want to look at Dave Portnoy, for people listening to this show, like him or hate him, I think he's the smartest fucking dude in media. He turned a clickbait Davey Clicks or whatever the fuck they called him. They turned him into this like person who could almost anoint another star. Like there's no way you go to Barstool and leave with less. And I think one of the things you're seeing that's interesting, and I'm curious where you guys are going with this as a family and a company, but like you look at The Ringer, I think Bill Simmons, while it's a little older generation of stuff, I think he did a fantastic job. His entire career has always been on the cutting edge. But what he recognized was there's all these personalities being built by these brands, and I could basically give them a process and a format and hand them a show and take harness all their networks. And he's turned Ringer obviously into a massive exit to Spotify, but in general, it's a future footprint to me. I don't know how else to do it. How do you guys look at this? Like, obviously you want to entertain, you want to grow your followings. You guys aren't doing this for nothing. How do you guys look at building this empire?
Yeah, I look at kind of building an empire and even just building like a personal brand of future. You have to be consistent.
Yep.
So look, on Twitter, for example, most of your following comes from a specific number of posts that do very, very well and kind of go viral in the sense, right? But once you have that following, you have to be consistent to teach them and kind of just your consistent posting and letting them know like what you're about. So finding that niche inside of what you're talking about. So my brother Joe actually talks about sports a lot, Anthony crypto, and I've kind of focused on a broad range of just business in general, because I think it's very, very important. And then also there's a time and place for less and more, right? So some posts and some newsletter require a lot more research, and some actually require a lot less, and they're more opinionated.
Yeah. So with that, talk to me a little bit about how you've carved out your niche. Cause obviously, as you mentioned, there's the sports business, which again, on the Darren Revelle front, he handed the baton over to your brother during the show, which was, I'm sure, a moment for everyone on the show. But you grabbing business, there's a lot of people out there who talk and shit post on business. You've taken a slightly different approach. You utilize, in my opinion, that's why I said I think you're the best tweeter of them. You utilize the landscape that Twitter gives you really well. It's not just like thread after thread after thread. It could be something as simple as a link on a story and like a little bit of background. Like, just how did you look at it, and how have you built the following that you've built?
Yeah, so I want to give a shout out to my brothers. They definitely helped me along the way, but it's really just about like finding what you deem interesting. So I talk about it all the time. I think CNBC talks about oil prices. Me personally, I didn't really ever care about oil prices, and I didn't think any of my friends or anyone like that did. So I try to find things that are interesting to me first. And then I kind of try to gauge my audience based off that. So you look at past performances, what has done well posting in the past, what hasn't, how have you structured those different things? And then moving forward, you try to kind of copy that almost using a formula of, hey, look, this is how things go viral and different algorithms work. And then the more and more you get into it, the more and more you realize how those algorithms work and you can kind of play those to your advantage.
Yeah, I think that's one thing that a lot of people don't spend enough time on is like, yeah, myself included, like I will just post shit because it's like, oh, it's the middle of the night. I got nothing going on watching a game. I don't put thought into that sometimes. And I do think that that's a main reason why I haven't grown the social following as much. I'm not consistent. I go in these like kind of binges. I feel like the modern kind of communicator, the modern media person, they absolutely have to understand the tech that underlies and underpins. If they don't, you really are just like pissing into a void. There's just almost no point to it.
Yeah, and you can look at any social platform and they all have algorithms, right? To push different content to different users and what they engage with. But yeah, look, I've done it before where you post something kind of like a two-word thing at 8 o'clock at night and you know it's not gonna get that engagement, but you gotta get your thought out almost. And that's just how it goes. I mean, you see people with massive followings and they can post something like that at 8 and it will still go viral, but it's also about who else engages with it. So that's why I love Twitter so much is that when someone else big engages with it, it will push it to their following as well versus Instagram or TikTok. It's a little bit harder to kind of share posts virally because even if someone with 400 posts follows it, you probably won't get as many followers or likes or engagement as you would on say Twitter.
Yep. No, 100% agree with you. And it's funny. I mean, I've also seen, like you mentioned, the fact that people with huge followings will be able to let it slide at 8 o'clock. I've also seen guys with gigantic followings get nothing. And like one of my best tweets ever was literally just a tweet of crickets. Like that's all it took. Like and everyone got it. I'm like, oh yeah, I get it. Click. You got to be creative.
Yeah. Well, that goes along with kind of what we saw earlier last week with Aussie Media, right? They had this massive following, but it wasn't an engagement following and they weren't really looking for that content. So I think when you Googled Aussie Media, one of the first things that came up is how do I unsubscribe? Right. So if you want a million,
always a good sign for a healthy business. How do I unsubscribe?
Yeah, exactly. If you want a million followers, you could buy a million followers. And you can sell advertisements based on that, but it's going to get a long kind of unwinding train of just advertisers going to realize you're not getting the engagement. And look, you can have as much reach as you want, but if people don't care about the content you're posting, they won't engage with it. So you could have a million followers that comment on everything, but if you post something that isn't relevant to them, they won't engage.
I think, you know, on the money front, I think it's really fascinating and very true right now is in the past, it was all about like how many. What is your reachable audience? I will pay you ahead for your reachable. Once advertising companies and so forth started to get wise to it, it was like, all right, I'm not going to pay you for the audience you could get. I'm going to pay you as you get it. And so they switch it over to the CPM model. Now, by taking the approach, it's almost like a upside down or reverse pyramid. Like if you have a massive following you paid for and didn't earn through engagement, you start here and you just go this way. It never goes up. It just this. It is the entrepreneurs and media folks like yourself that come in and can have 20,000 followers. You're at what, 200,000 now or maybe more than that?
I'm at 50. I think Anthony and Joe are at 300 and a million respectively.
Okay. So like as they go up, the value that they're going to get paid for clicks is going to go up and up and up. And it's the exact opposite of the way that the model was built. And I think that's why guys like you have been able to be so successful. It's like, yeah, I understand the reader. I know why I'm doing what I'm doing, but the brands who will back you and for, you know, some of them already got sponsors. I know the main show on YouTube has sponsors. For you, as you collect sponsors, you don't have to have 500,000 followers. You can have 50,000. They're like, I'm backing you because I know you're on your way to 500,000.
Yeah, I was actually talking about someone earlier about this, which I think is interesting, is if you know income sharing agreements like they do in professional sports, I was thinking about that for kind of content creation. I think the hardest thing is almost vetting the creator and realizing who has potential and who's going to put in the work. And then obviously income sharing agreements, you'll get a percentage of their future income for that kind of upfront payment. But it's an interesting concept to me.
You need to do that. You literally, like you guys got to pull some of that money out of Pomp's rolling fund. And start that shit. Cause I 100% think that is not only the future, it is so, like, we're already getting to a point where we bet on everything. Like whether it's NFTs that you're actually buying and trading or crypto or Robinhood or crowdfunding and startups like I do, like there's you're able to bet. I mean, people are buying obviously cards. People are using Rally and buying shares of cards, shares of jerseys, shares of auto, like everything is for sale is the point. And I think you're 100% onto something with that idea.
Yeah. With that investing front of shares, it's really interesting to see where we have gone from the fractional share base. So you have guys like Collectible, for example, yep. which lets you own those high-end assets at a fractional share. And I think that is genius. And I think that's obviously where we're going in the future.
Oh my God. Everything is fractional. The show, like whether the show will be successful, will be fractionalized at some point. At least I hope. So you talked about, you've got a lot of different interests, obviously business. What are some of the things right now? It doesn't have to be business, but like, what are some of the things that you personally find really interesting? Maybe storylines that you're kind of loosely following that may not be like, you know, they're not out there yet, or they could be, but they just haven't hit the fever pitch yet.
Yeah, different storylines. I mean, I follow crypto very well. I obviously, I'm a young male. I love sports. I've grown up on sports. And then to be honest, I follow philanthropy a lot. That's something that's always kind of interests me in giving back to people and everything that goes along with kind of how to help other people. Because look, at the end of the day, I believe it's really what you give back and not what you have.
I want to ask you a question, follow up on that. How do we get more young people? I know it's buzzy and everyone loves like the mission driven and we give time and I want people to keep doing that. Like I'm not shitting on it, but there's a lot of selfishness and myself included, but like, I'm just going to say 37 and down. Like, the idea of actually getting more young people involved philanthropically, get them to actually back something and unify and devote time and real money. How do we get more people to do that?
Yeah. So I think it's a community effort, right? So when you see someone else doing good or you're hanging around someone that's doing good, you're more inclined to kind of do that. I'm in the Big Brothers Big Sisters program, and I personally enjoy it because it's more of like a mentoring and I can see the growth and how I am actually helping versus just throwing money at a problem and hoping it gets solved. That's one of the reasons I also love Bitcoin is because it helps people be financially free, right? So one of the biggest problems I think in the world is that kind of financial stability and financial sovereignty that a lot of people don't have. And that's what I think can be helpful.
I hope that a lot of the groups that facilitate that, whether it's big charities or kind of the duct tape groups that actually facilitate purchase and donation and tips and so forth. I hope that they listen to that conversation, because what I think is one of the big driving forces away from it, what prohibits a lot of the activity you'd like to see, is people our age get involved in something and then they kind of see it misused or they're not really like actually utilized. And so like, well, what is my money doing? Like you become disengaged, disenfranchised. I'm hoping that the next evolution is not like, hey, buy a pair of Toms and we give Toms away. Like, keep doing that. Appreciate it. But I want to see my money at work. I want to see you use me, like ask me to do something for you, for your cause, and I will stay engaged with it. I think that's the missing component right now.
Yeah. The biggest turnoff for me for a lot of philanthropy, to be honest, is that where is my money going? And then you also understand that a lot of money seems to be wasted in these large organizations. You look at it and I donated the other day to one of my friends was doing like a charity run or a charity bike from New York City to the Hamptons. And I did a donation and they charged me 7% on the donation. And I was like, I understand you have some operational costs that go along with it. But I was like, that's more than you're going to make this year in the sense of like what you do on the donation front. So it was just interesting to see that like no matter what you do, you have those operational costs that you have to cover. But what is the line of being a nonprofit and all that? We could spend hours on that. But it's interesting to see. And that's one of the biggest turnoffs, I think, is like people don't see where it's going and people believe their money is just being wasted or people are taking advantage of certain programs.
Not to always shove things back to crypto and decentralization, which is certainly the topic of the day in the last few years even. But I think that's where some of these things get solved. Like I think you start to see transparency and the lack of transaction fees and just sort of making it look like, ugh, like that, like you're just raising your hand and saying I cheat. Like you might as well just tell me. I think this makes that more feasible. And it almost holds accountability to not just for charity, but for real businesses. It makes them accountable. They have to be.
Yeah, absolutely. That's one of the best things, is being transparent about what's going on. So if every nonprofit kind of shared with every single donor, look, this is exactly every single dollar, this is how we spread it out, and you knew that's how they spread it out, and they could prove that's how they spread it out, I think it would incentivize a lot more people to kind of get involved in whatever they think is an interesting philanthropic endeavor.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's funny. You go back in time and you look at the quote unquote, the ledger, you go to the general store in the Wild West, and it was a piece of paper on a door, was your name and your town and your little sign and how much you owed. And then from there to now, it's been bullshit, just worse and worse and worse. And now we're back to a place where it's almost like, this is your sign, this is your spend, this is your what you got in receipt. And there it is. I think that's a good thing in the end of the day.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. Last question I'm going to throw at you. What should we be looking for on your Twitter next? What's something you're working on, something you're going to drop for us that people will see by the time they listen to this podcast?
I'm about to start working on, speak of philanthropy, Keanu Reeves is one of, I think, one of the most underrated people based on his philanthropy. And
he's modern day Chuck Norris. He is the next, everything is going to be Keanu as it was Chuck Norris, just for those who are not initiated.
I was a Walker, Texas Ranger fan growing up. So yeah. I know Chuck Norris and love his work dearly.
So Keanu, you were saying.
Yeah, Keanu. I think he does a lot of philanthropy that goes unnoticed. And that's kind of what I enjoy about it, is it's very low key. And a lot of guys, you know, they'll professional athletes, celebrities, they'll do an event and they'll make sure cameras are at the event. Yeah. Right. And no matter who you are, if you're helping the homeless, you're going to realize that as being a homeless person, you're going to be like, look, he's just doing it for this. Like, I don't get the same feeling as that. And I know some individuals that will go and they will say there's not going to be one camera there for that reason, because they're doing it for the actual doing good and not just, hey, I want the publicity of being a quote unquote good guy.
Awesome. I love it. John, thanks so much for taking the time to join us. People should go on Twitter, John Pompliano, follow, check it out. And of course, give us one last plug for the YouTube show. Where are people finding you? When are they finding you?
Yeah, the best business show on YouTube. We go every day, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. daily. You can watch there. And obviously, I suggest watching more of Scott's podcasts. They are great.
I appreciate that.
A few episodes. They're awesome.
I appreciate that very much. I want to petition to have you co-host. I think Anthony gets enough of the FaceTime. It's time to put the real family star at the top. You know what I'm saying? I think that's where we're going.
Yeah, I appreciate that.
If you're interested in self-directed investing from startups to crypto and public markets, my Substack is a great way to learn how professional investors screen, review, and pull the trigger on deals. Join the largest community of micro investors and startup founders on Substack by going to katoon.com.